Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in Central Iowa. Your hosts for today are Susan Franson and Gina McAndrews. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks, Mike. Gina will be my co-host for the first half of the show, where we'll be talking about various responses to COVID-19 in education, in activist organizing, and in testing. That's in recognition for having the worst COVID-19 outbreak in the world. That was the headline in Iowa's Starting Line, and we did share the honor with Iowa City. Iowa City is part of our feature story about the lawsuit from the Iowa State Education Association, which is also suing on behalf of the Iowa City Board of Education.
Wow, that sounds like quite a story. What's the activist doing?
Oh, the activist organizing is last weekend, Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement held their annual convention remotely. Through their Facebook page, you could get a live feed of the event. And if you went to their website, you could get a transcript to follow along. This is all still there. If you're interested, you can see it.
Last year, I recall you said the CCI convention was downtown at the event center, and it lasted all day.
Yes, it was much more exciting to be there in person.
Didn't you record everything by plugging into your speaker system? Was that a lot easier?
Yes, it was much more exciting to be there in person.
Yeah, it was easier. But for the radio, this was a little too intense. Last year, I was able to edit out a full hour from the speakers. But this time, the speakers, all of them, only had an hour and a half. So they focused on firing up the potential activists. And it was more political. And there is a lot more politics this year to get fired up about. I picked the selection that dealt with today's theme, coping with COVID-19.
And I think you mentioned you have a special live interview for me. Who is that?
Ames just has gotten
the new Iowa Test Clinic,
where anyone could get a fast test for COVID-19, reliable test. And we have Steve Sullivan from Mary Greeley to give us the details.
Wow, I'm really looking forward to that.
And Mike Baranek spoke with me yesterday about why the Iowa State Education Association is suing Governor Reynolds. Let's listen to it.
My name is Mike Baranek, and I am a third grade teacher from West Des Moines, Iowa, and I'm on leave to serve as president of the Iowa State Education Association. I have taught third grade for 30 years in West Des Moines. I miss working with students and their families, yes, very much so, but we are in a time where I believe it's good for me to be in the role that I'm in currently to help address the needs of our students and our educators in our state, but I do miss working with students, yes.
For those who may not know, what is the Iowa State Education Association?
The Iowa State Education Association is a union that represents educators in the state of Iowa. We are an affiliate of the National Education Association, and in Iowa, we represent classroom teachers, paraprofessionals, ESPs, educational support professionals, higher ed individuals who work at our community colleges. We also represent individuals who work at our area education agencies, retired individuals, and aspiring educators, students who are in the pre-profession in college.
What is Senate File 2310, which gives guidance to reopening schools during the coronavirus pandemic?
The law that was developed by our legislators and signed by the governor this past spring has some conflicting points to it. And our lawsuit that we have presented is addressing a number of issues that we have with not only the piece of legislation that was developed, but also with the governor's interpretation of that law. But we believe that the governor has exceeded her authority under Senate File 2310 and does not have the authority to obstruct the decisions that are made at the local school district level. We just believe that it's very important for local school districts to make the decisions which are appropriate for their communities, and that they need to be utilizing the information provided to them by their county health departments and other medical professionals, and to use the data that's presented to help them make the decision on whether that school district should be fully in person, if they should utilize a hybrid plan, or if they should be fully online virtual learning. There was quite a bit of confusion after the governor had made her proclamation in July 17th. Prior to that, school districts had been working very hard to develop plans which they could turn into the state as of July 1st. And those plans needed to have three different components. One would be a possibility for full in-person learning, a hybrid which would offer in-person and virtual learning, and then the third would be full virtual learning with students staying home and receiving education via internet, or however the district chose to do that. And then the proclamation came out, and the work that had been put forth throughout the summer by the school districts and administrators and educators seemed to be in conflict with the directives that were laid forth in the proclamation. And so, yes, there was quite a bit of confusion within our schools and with the metrics that were used in the governor's proclamation. Districts were very unsure of how they were going to proceed this fall. And so districts have been working very hard to understand the metrics that were presented by the governor. And there are some districts whose school board has voted to use metrics that are given to them from the national CDC, which are different than what the governor had put in her proclamation. With the protocols that are established by the governor, districts need to apply for waivers if they are not going to be having their students fully in person in a school district. And in order to get those waivers, they need to meet the metrics as established by the governor. And as we have seen, Susan, here in the past week, our numbers of individuals who are testing positive is far above what the metrics were even established by the governor. And if a district is fortunate enough to get a waiver to change the process on what they're doing to educate children, those waivers typically are only applicable for 14 days. Well, it makes it incredibly hard for educators, for administrators, for parents to one day be receiving a program in one format and then for 2 weeks changing that format and then going back to a different format. And so it's hard for parents to make plans on childcare, what they need to set up for their own jobs. That makes it incredibly difficult for the educators who are in our buildings to roll from being in-person education to online, then back to in-person. And the inconsistency is also very difficult for students. We want our students to be in school this fall, and we certainly want them to be learning and growing and understanding how to be a part of our United States and being a productive citizen. But when students could come home from school one day and they find out that the next day they need to be learning virtually for 2 weeks, that's a disruption in their learning pattern, of course. And It makes it difficult for them to complete the work sometimes.
The specific problems for Iowa City schools led the Iowa State Education Association to join their concerns with those of Iowa City in a lawsuit, which is coming up for a hearing tomorrow.
We have a very strong local association in Iowa City that works incredibly well with the school board and the school administration. And that community knew that when students returned this fall, that the positivity rates would skyrocket. And so the school board, in anticipation of what they saw could happen this fall, applied for a waiver so they could go fully online with their education plans this fall. And that waiver was turned down. And we were in contact with them because we also believed that they should be able to make the decision that's appropriate for the Iowa City community, and that the Senate file and the governor's proclamation didn't allow for that community to make the correct decision. And so the lawsuit that we have with Iowa City is not just for Iowa City, but it is to allow all of our school districts in Iowa to make the decisions that are appropriate for them. As we know, Susan, there are counties in our state that have very low positivity rates, and it fully is appropriate for them to be in person. But as we are seeing that's happening in Ames and Iowa City and in Des Moines and other parts of our state, the positivity rate has just skyrocketed. And those districts should be able to make the decisions on the spot on what's appropriate and not have to go through a waiver process and then possibly having those waivers turned down. And Iowa City had their waiver initially turned down, and that's why we moved forward with the lawsuit.
If that hearing takes place, what do you hope from its outcome?
Well, we hope that the judge will put the injunction in place and will allow districts to make the decisions right now which are appropriate for their communities. And we would like to see that the judge says that the governor did misinterpret the Senate file and has implemented metrics which are not appropriate to be using in our state at this time.
In case you just tuned in, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. And you've just heard from Mike Baranek, president of the Iowa State Education Association, describing the reasons why the ISEA and the Iowa City Community School District are suing Governor Reynolds over in-person learning requirements. Another organization concerned with the spread of COVID-19 will tell us about their approach to combating it, and that is Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement. Let's listen to speakers from Rooted in Justice, their annual convention held last weekend.
Even after a record number of new cases this week, Governor Reynolds will not issue a statewide face covering policy. That's why we launched our Mask Up Iowa petition, which over 6,000 people now have signed, demanding a common sense solution that can help stop the spread of COVID-19. When local leaders felt the heat from organized people power, a few stepped up, and some cities have passed a mask requirement. But Governor Reynolds still refuses to act. And even today, she's rushing to cram students back into crowded classrooms, which is why brave teachers, staff, parents, and allies took to the streets earlier this month to demand a safer return to schools.
COVID has threatened our communities, but it's our leaders' lack of action that caused the real harm. That's why Iowa CCI Action is pushing for policies like a people's bailout. We must guarantee health care as a human right through Medicare for All. and extends economic support directly to the people.
And we know that COVID-19 is not the only crisis we're facing, though. The recent climate disaster left many communities completely in shambles. Neighborhoods came together to deal with the devastation, but our governor, she was missing in action. She was offering corporate bailouts instead of sustainable solutions.
Unfortunately, climate disasters like the ones we saw earlier this month will likely only get worse. The megastorms happening in Iowa, the twin hurricanes in the Gulf of Mexico, and the wildfires in California are evidence of the increasing effects of climate chaos. Industrial agriculture and factory farms are poisoning our land and water and feeding climate-changing emissions into the atmosphere. This is not just risking the public health. It's also risking our planet's health.
That's why this year, CCI Action continued our fight against Big Ag's unchecked power. We filed a lawsuit demanding that the state of Iowa protect our right to clean water. And we're going all the way to the Iowa Supreme Court. We're also continuing to organize against factory farm expansions into our communities.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, covering stories about COVID-19 today. We just heard a speech for last Saturday's convention for Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement with a plea to mask it up. Unconnected with that call to action, the Ames City Council held a two-hour special session last night that resulted in passing a mask ordinance without a penalty. Turning to another important item of local news, Gina McAndrews will be talking with Steve Sullivan, Director of Marketing and Community Relations at Mary Greeley Medical Center, about the new Iowa Test Clinic. Welcome, Steve.
Local Talk is proud to announce that Ames now has a Test Iowa site. Steve Sullivan, Director of Marketing and Community Relations at Mary Greeley Medical Center, is here to tell us about it. Welcome, Steve.
Hi, how are you? Nice to see you.
So can you tell us about the new test site and where it's going to be located?
Yeah, the Story County Test Iowa Clinic opened on Monday, August 31. This being Wednesday, September 2nd, this is actually the second day for it. The first day went very well. It's a drive-through clinic, and it's located out of at the Iowa State University Research Center, 2503 South Loop Drive. For more exact, it's across the street from Provisions Restaurant. You'll see a white tent and a parking lot. That's it. It is operated by Mary Greeley Medical Center, and we played a central role in making a request to the state, to Test Iowa, to have a clinic set up in Ames. And we worked with Iowa State University, with the City of Ames, with Story County Medical Center, with Primary Health Center to set up the clinic here.
Wow, that's terrific.
Yeah, it's very much a partnership. So once we got the go-ahead, the green light from the Test Iowa that we could get a clinic going here, we then had to find a site for it. So we worked with the university to get the site set up at some space they had available at the research park. It's a very convenient location for this purpose. We then hired staff for it. We have clinical and non-clinical. We really need those clinical folks who do the swab. And this is the big swab. This is the one that goes way up in there. So we have a group of very talented folks out there who are doing this. We call them the swab squad. So they're out there helping folks. So right now the site is open on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 12:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. We're hoping to do 100 plus people a day once we get up and running. The most important thing to know about the clinic is you have to go to the Test Iowa site, testiowa.com, and do the assessment. That determines if you're qualified to get a test at the Test Iowa clinic. If you go through the test, and it's very brief, It asks questions about a health situation, where you work, height, weight, that sort of thing. You then have an opportunity to choose where you want to have your test done. There are Test Iowa sites and clinics. There are two different things. Sites are run by the National Guard. Clinics are run by a clinical partner in the community. In this case, the clinic is run by the hospital. So you qualify, and then you have an opportunity to choose where you want to have the test done. There's a list, and you will not see the Story County test clinic in the first list. You have to push additional options. That brings up a second list, and you will see the Story County Test Iowa clinic on that second list, and then you click that. You then will get a QR code, which you will be sent to your cell phone. If you have a smartphone, you'll get it to your cell phone and your email, and you will bring that with you to your appointment. There is some confusion because it's not particularly clear on the Test Iowa site that you need to call the clinic to make an appointment. So some people, because of the news accounts that went out, that phone number was put out. But that phone number, for the record, is 800-866-3492. 800-866-3492. That is the number you call if you have qualified for a Test Iowa clinic test. That's the number you call to schedule your appointment. Now, that was a lot of information. We do have a very simple graphic that explains each step that I just went over. It is available on the hospital's website. We have a coronavirus page that you can access through our homepage. You will find that there. We also have it posted to the hospital's Facebook page. We've also made it available to our partners, so they have it available as well. But that's your best option. Access that for the complete directions on how to do this.
What's the best link to put up? The hospital's Facebook page, or?
I would put the hospital's coronavirus page, which is.
Is that better than testiowa.com?
Well, you still have to go to Test Iowa to do the assessment, but this is all the instructions. It also has that 800 number.
Terrific.
So you'll want that. So if you go to mgmc.org/coronavirus, all those instructions are there. I'm not sure if we have the graphic up there yet, but we will.
Okay.
And then so they can either call in or use the QR code.
No, you have to call to make an appointment.
You call to make an appointment.
You take the Test Iowa assessment on the Test Iowa site. You qualify for the test. You select your location. In this case, you're probably selecting the Story County location. Then you get the QR code. You have to bring the QR code with you, whether it's printed out or on your cell phone, to the test site. But to get an appointment, you have to call that 800 number.
And if there's people that, I'm guessing there might be some older people that don't have a smartphone or email, they cannot get tested then, or?
Well, I would recommend that they take the assessment if they qualify, and I'm going to guess some, depending on age, that might be qualification enough. They should, hopefully they'll have somebody helping them, you know, who can help them through that, and maybe use a friend's email, email address to get the QR code, because it's still going to be their information on the Test Iowa. So hopefully they'll have a friend, a caretaker, who can help them through that. But then they can call the number. There is a number for questions. There's a, on the Test Iowa site, there is a phone number you can call with questions, or you can ask those questions if you qualify for the test and call that 800 number to schedule your appointment. Any questions like that, you can address with those folks.
Okay. And again, it's a swab test, and you're open Monday, Wednesday, Friday?
at present, yes. Monday got full. Wednesday is probably booked by now, and I'm guessing Friday is. We will not be open Labor Day. And it's really important to have this this service now, because previously, I mean, it's one more option for testing, and there's a very high interest in testing right now. And the prior to this, the closest test Iowa locations are Des Moines and Marshalltown. So having it in Ames with our population, and we have a fairly high level of population that has not been tested yet. And there's a high demand at the university. So this is another avenue for students who might be concerned, who might be in a risk group, or who might be symptomatic.
Yeah, it sounds like we're leading the world right now, according to the news in new cases of coronavirus.
Yeah, not exactly the classification one wants, but on the bright side, if there is one, it indicates that people are being tested. We are finding those folks who are positive. We can get those steps in place to help slow any additional community spread, but we're probably going to be seeing this level for at least a couple more weeks.
And how long does it take for them to get results?
Typically, say 72 hours. A lot of time it's sooner. The testing has gotten, the whole process has really sped up since the early days, back in March and April, when all this really kind of cranked up. So there are more options for testing, and there are more services for it. So typically, almost any test, unless you're doing like a couple hour turnaround at the hospital because you're in the hospital and we're doing a really fast test, which we have ability to do for people in the hospital. It typically takes 2 to 3 days. And a lot of time it takes sooner. If it takes longer than that, that just means there's a backup at the labs and they just have a whole lot to go through. With Labor Day coming up, there might be a little backup early next week, but because the state hygienic lab will be closed. And I'm assuming some of the reference labs we use will be as well.
We've read different countries have different types of tests, and a lot of them here can hear the results more quickly, like hours. Is it a hold up here because of just the number of result places or labs that we have to do the results, or just the different types of tests that we have access to compared to others, or?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm the best source to answer that question, but based on my observations, what I've seen here, I would think there are a number of ways to do the test. The test, if you're a pre-procedural test, if you're going to have a procedure, surgery at the hospital, we're going to have you come in probably 3 days prior to your surgery and have you do a test. Now, that's not the big swab way up there, the brain swab, as it's called by some folks. It's one that just we do a saliva test, actually. And it's just a saliva test, and that will rule out coronavirus, but it doesn't do much more than that. The other one's a little bit more expansive in what it can show. So part of it is the purpose of the test. Part of it's test supplies. We're always waiting to get that next shipment of test supplies, and supplies are challenging. And there's just a lot of people here, you know. So. We're doing the best we can, though, it's gotten better. It's gotten better with each passing month. It's gotten better.
Yes, we're 8 months in, and hopefully it'll continue to get better.
Have you been tested? Have you had a test?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I qualified, but I think it's because I work at a hospital. So I did it just to have the experience of it, that's when I realized it's not real clear where you call for your appointment. So the result of that was trying to get more information out there.
Oh, that's terrific. Yeah, I've had, even police and people that work for the police station and that sort of thing who've been exposed and then had to go take a test and they didn't get results for 5, 6, 7 days. And meanwhile, they're still working and these things. And it's kind of by the time they get the results, it's a little past, it's halfway over almost.
Yeah, but again, it has gotten better. Also, I want to add, if you qualified for a test and you called that 800 number and left a message, be patient. They'll get back to you. They're coming in every morning and they've got 40 to 50 calls waiting for them. So the demand for this is quite high. So if you're thinking about it, I would take the test, and if you qualify, get that thing scheduled as soon as you can, because it's going to be very busy, especially next week when we're only open the 2 days.
And how does that schedule go? So you get a range of time between 1 and 1:30?
I'm not quite sure, but yes, I believe so. It's a pretty quick process. You go in, you show your code, and you just drive right through. Now, some people don't have their own transportation, mm-hmm. or they don't drive, and that's fine. If you take Cyride, if you ride your bike out there, that's fine. You folks will be accommodated. That we're going to have some chairs there for people who come in with their QR code and have their appointment, and we'll have some chairs there to get them going. And if it really cranks up, right now we have one lane out there, but it's set up where we can do two.
And people need to show up with mask, gloves.
You should always wear a mask. Yes. Absolutely. You should see. You should wear a mask and bring your photo ID and your QR code.
Yeah.
Because your QR code is sort of your connection back to your Test Iowa test. It says you're qualified, you're in the roster, and they have you on the list, and so they can get you taken care of.
So the saliva test says you don't have the virus. What does these brain swab type 1 tell you?
I think it indicates it tests for more than just coronavirus. It might tell you you have flu. It's just a bit more of an, you know, it's a bit more of an extreme test to rule out coronavirus or detect coronavirus. But I also think it can detect some other things.
Oh, great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Steve.
Certainly. And if you have any questions about the Test Iowa Clinic, there is a number on the Test Iowa site, but you're also more than welcome to call the hospital, and you can call me. Just call the hospital and ask for me.
All right. Well, we've been talking with Steve Sullivan, who's the Director of Marketing and Community Relations at Mary Greeley Medical Center, telling us about our important new Test Iowa site that has opened in Research Park at 2305 South Loop Drive in Research Park in Ames. And the links to the website you can find on our KHOIFM.org website as well. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
And I, Susan Franzen, have been your hosts for the first half of the hour. Now, Pat Schlarbaum is joining us to introduce a celebration taking place on Labor Day. What's it all about, Pat?
Well, Susan, but first let's talk about the estate sale that just occurred at Paul's home here in Ames, 604 Hodge and 6th Street. And that estate sale was coordinated by Lynn Carey, and I just really want to provide some kudos to all her assistants and Jim Popson and his wife, Julie. They really put in 4 days of a real task and were very successful in essentially sending a lot of Paul's good home furnishings off to other homes. And so it's kind of like a repurposing that is still underway. But boy, it was just great to have the community stop by and help out, because all the funds are going to KHOI Community Radio. So, yeah, you mentioned this weekend there's going to be let's call it a house party or an opportunity to gather at Paul Nelson's home one more time. The Barn Owl Band will be performing on the porch. It'll be between 5 and 8 p.m. And here's a little promo about other details concerning Monday, September 7th.
Paul Nelson, beloved comrade and KHOI's technical guru, is no longer with us in flesh, but his house is, and his spirit continues to fill it and uplifts our spirits, especially these days. On Monday, musicians will gather once again at the house, on the front porch for the sounds of life and community, even if most of it must be virtual. We gather to honor Paul and Sherry, their home, and to lift our own spirits, reconnect and remember our hearts, and raise money for the station that Paul built to keep community on the air. No matter where you may be, join us on Facebook, YouTube, or in the front yard on Monday, Labor Day, September 7th from 5 to 8 p.m. for the Last Waltz Concert by the Barn Owl Band with musical guests Solvig Orngard on guest fiddle, Merle Hall on guest banjo, Steve Hurst on guest guitar and vocal, John Dubik, Barn Owl guitar and vocal and sound person, Tom Richards, Barn Owl mandolin, guitar, and vocal, and Marty Miller, the Barn Owl upright bass and percussion. The evening will be hosted by KHOI board member and Paul's friend, yours truly, Pat Schlarbaum. And of course, it is a profound privilege to represent the folks of the KHOI Board of Directors. During breaks for the musicians, the digital performance stream will also bring you many who remember Paul and Sherry's hospitality and good times at 604 Hodge. So many good times at 604 Hodge at 6th Street. They will tell the stories that should or shouldn't be told. You will be able to bid on one-of-a-kind items such as Paul's personal military flight jacket, Paul's original R. Crumb book, and original artwork by Paul's friend and former Ames artist Eric Saleen, and works by Janine Coop Writing and former Ames artist who lived at 604 Hodge, and CDs of the Pool Hall Waltz Band, and mementos from KHOI's own radio personalities. So save the date and come waltz with us 2020 style, Labor Day, September 7th from 5 to 8 p.m. on KHOI 89.1 FM and KHOIFM.org. Video stream on Facebook or YouTube at KHOI Community Radio. If you are in Ames, you may stop by the front yard as space permits. Face coverings and social distancing will be required. So see you virtually or personally Monday, 5 to 8 p.m. from Paul Nelson's home. See you on the radio, and thank you, Paul Nelson.
Thank you, Barn Owl Band. I'll send it back to you, Susan. Let's learn more about the Barn Owl Band.
Well, actually, long before there was KHOI, I remember that Barn Owl Band made some news, not just here, but they were the guest performers on Prairie Home Companion. And so they had a national audience before they ever joined up with us. And then the second connection was our New Year's Eve party, long before we had a studio, when we were still writing grants, hoping we could get some money to buy equipment. We had a beautiful New Year's party at the Unitarian Fellowship, and we had the Barn Owl Band. That's when I first met John Dubik. Of course, I've known Marty, and Marty is here with us today. Marty Miller. Hello, Marty, welcome.
Well, thank you, Susan. I am really happy to be here. And yes, we have had a long association and great fans of KHOI, and happy to always help the station. And let me say that the Barn Owl Band and the guests all knew Paul, and we are great friends. And this is our opportunity to actually honor Paul and to remember him. We all have great memories. I mean, my wife and I, Marcia, have spent many a time at Paul and Sherry's home and had great times with him. And Paul was always such a gracious host, and it was just wonderful here. It was always wonderful to talk to him. And he was a fellow musician. I mean, his Pool Hall Waltz Band, remember them? You know, way back when, was one of my favorite groups. Always tried to go see them wherever they were playing. And so this is a great opportunity for the Barnells. And it's a great opportunity for us to play. Talking about that performance, we have some guest musicians here, and we have some musicians, Barnells, that have left us recently and gone on to other things. And so, but we wanted to do this. One of our members that have left, it was our fiddle player, who was Wyatt Jamison, a student at Iowa State that has many things going for him and just cannot remain as a Barnell right now. And Solveig Orngard is going to be the fiddle player for that evening. And Solveig, let me tell you, Solveig and her brother Ayler Orngard are just great, magnificent musicians here. Both of them started with the Barnells when they were teenagers. They were in high school and already very accomplished musicians. And so we were just wonderful. You know, we're an intergenerational group, you know, an old man like me, and I'm the oldest one in the group, with young people in the group keeps me young, let me tell you that. Solveig happens to be in town. She doesn't live here. She's here visiting her parents and was available to help us out. We haven't had a lot of time to practice. Also, with the COVID-19 problem, it's hard for musicians to get together. You know, we have to be careful, and it's risky, you know, to have vocalists and have instruments. So we haven't practiced very much. When we do practice, we're always safe here, safe distancing and masked up here. We will be performing on Labor Day and looking forward to it. It will be pretty much like a let's get together and play music here. We all love music. We all love the music. This is really unique music, by the way, that Barnells play. And it's music that you could obviously dance to. You know, Barnells, hey, where did that name come from? From Barnes. And we do it because we're the house band of the Central Iowa Barn Dance Association, so we could do contra dances and square dances here. That's the kind of music we're playing, but we're also going to filter in some nice vocals, and many of those vocals will be in honor of Paul Nelson here, things that he would have liked and that he would probably play. You know, gosh, you know, we miss Paul's wonderful voice and his great guitar playing here. So that's what we're doing, and we're going to have a good time as a band and with the audience.
And we have some of your songs today with maybe not the cast that we're going to be hearing on the porch, but you want to comment on the musicians on your recordings?
Sure will. Here. And the music, by the way, we have three CDs, the Barnell Band. And so the music on those CDs are pretty much the same type of music that people will hear. And the band is composed, our Paul Nelson Band is composed of Solveig Orngard on fiddle. And a great alum that actually was one of the originators of the band, Merle Hall, one of the best frailing banjo players in Iowa here. He's going to join us. And then we're going to have Steve Hurst, who is a very fine guitar player, does some vocals, and he has been helping us out on times that we need to have a gig and we need musicians. And then the Barn Owls themselves, Tom Richards, who will be a mandolin picker and also play some guitar, but also a fine vocalist. He's known to KHOI, has played on KHOI, and so it's great to have Tom. He's our most recent member of the band. John Dufick is also one of the originators of the Barn Owl Band way back. You know, the Barn Owl Band goes back to 1991. I mean, there's not too many bands in this world that have lasted as long as we have. And we all aged, let me tell you. You could see by my gray hair. When I first started, I actually had dark hair, kind of long, curly hair. It's all gone just about now. But, oh, well, that's what happens. That's another issue. Well, we could talk about Susan sometime. And then, so John Dufick is in the one of the originators, and he's also our sound person here, and he does some wonderful vocals too. Very talented guy. And then me, Marty Miller, on upright bass here, and also an instrument called the Bawron, which is the Irish drum. It's a round drum. You have to play with a stick called the tipper, and it's great for dancing because it keeps the dancers going on beat, and that's what a bass player do. I hope I'm on beat. Anyways, the band will tell me if I'm not on the right beat, that's for sure. I get really bad looks from them. So that's what we're up to. We are all really excited about doing this.
Well, sounds like something. Now, I have a question. You've been talking about being listening to this on Facebook and live stream. And normally we broadcast our concerts. Is this not possible from the house?
To broadcast?
Yeah.
Our concert.
Like on the radio.
On the radio? Did you want to come to my house and broadcast? Actually, it can be done, Susan. You know, we have been doing dances called Zoom dances. And these are dances where we are on my back porch playing our wonderful music, having a great time with our masks on and separated. And then in my driveway is Reed Miller, who's a caller for our dances. And Reed is, you know, such a creative caller. And he calls and he looks into his computer, and people all over the country are dancing in their living rooms while we're playing. Reed goes through the steps. He has a friend that helps him show the steps, demonstrate the steps, or sometimes he has a broom that he dances with, you know, as his partner. Sometimes a canoe paddle. You know, and he shows them, and then he turns and says, "Barn Owls, go!" And then we just play our music, and people dance, and he calls. So, a lot can be done by Zoom, and I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of bands doing Zoom sort of stuff.
And Susan and Marty, Jim Popson will be addressing getting the feed onto the our radio station. A lot of moving parts, but we have secured an internet connection from across the street. So there's a community involvement underway to make the broadcast.
KHOI Community Radio.
Absolutely. That's right. Yes. We got to keep people dancing in this day and age. Dancing and music, it's the well-being of us all, for the band as well as the community.
Well, this is really an exciting event to watch unfold.
Absolutely exciting.
Well, thanks for coming in, Marty. And I think, do we have another song for the Barn Owls, Mike?
Yeah, play us something else, Mike. to say something about that song. That was written by Merle Hall, our banjo picker, who you will see on Labor Day. He wrote that, and that's become kind of a popular song among our fans here. So that even showcases Merle's ability, and not only as a player of a banjo, and his style is called frailing banjo, which is, someday we'll talk about the different banjo styles, but it's one of the oldest styles of banjoing, and Merle has taught a lot of people how to do that kind of banjo picking.
Pat had another announcement to make. Is that right?
Oh, I invited Marty over to the house to record your comments that we'd have for Labor Day. I'll be there later today and tomorrow. So people that have particularly fond memories of Paul and his home, Paul and Sherry's home, swing by or get a hold of the station, and I'll be glad to have those documented and available then Monday for the program.
Okay, will do.
Thank you, Marty.
Thank you all.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people's stories and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts, Gina McAndrews and Susan Franzen, and for the last half of the program, Pat Schlarbaum. Other voices you heard were Mike Baranek, Sean Sebastian, Steve Sullivan, and Marty Miller.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at 7 p.m. At noon, the Ames Public Library will present Reading Radio. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories.
Local Talk was engineered by Michael Murphy. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards. Tom Richards is a barn owl, as you have heard, from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was from the CD, The Cloud Forest, by the Barn Owl Band.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop, as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. Or you can contact us through our website at khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. That's also all you need to know to contact us if you want to become a member or renew your membership today. You can go to khoifm.org and hit that yellow donate, become a member button.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening. And see you again on the radio and maybe on the live feed on Labor Day.